Today on The Grave Talks, Inside Paranormal Investigations, a conversation with Broken Wings Paranormal. For paranormal investigators, every case brings something different. But some experiences are harder to walk away from. For members of Broken Wings Paranormal, those moments have come while investigating a wide range of haunted locations across the western United States. Working as a team, they bring different perspectives and approaches into each case, but what they encounter isn't always easy to explain. They share the experiences that have stayed with them, direct responses, unexplained activity, and interactions that go beyond what they expected to find. Alongside those encounters, they also talk about what it's like to investigate as a team, how they approach each location, and how they make sense of the evidence they capture. It's a look at the moments that stand out during real paranormal investigations and the role a team plays in trying to understand them. Today on The Grave Talks, Inside Paranormal Investigations, a conversation with Broken Wings Paranormal. Well, I am with today, I think, the most people I have ever had on one episode, Broken Wings Paranormal. And I've got Erica, Steve, Cody, Brady, Susie, Laura, and Chelsea. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
So this is going to be fun today. I want to start with Erica today, because you are one of the founders of Broken Wings Paranormal, and you're based out of Utah, correct? Ogden, Salt Lake City area?
Salt Lake City, yeah.
Okay. How did this team get started?
A friend of mine and my husband's, Robbie, called my husband and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about starting a ghost hunting team. Would you like to go ghost hunting with me?" And he was like, "No way in hell." And then he told me about it, and I was like, "Call him back. We're going. Absolutely. Why would you tell him no?" So that's how I got into it.
I'm going to guess, though, that wasn't a random phone call. There had to have been reason. Like, did he think you might be interested in the paranormal? Had you expressed some interest in the paranormal?
I don't think I ever did to Robbie, because we weren't very close, kind of just acquaintances. I know his brother better than I know him, actually. I think he was just trying to find people to help him out and join a team. He dabbles in everything.
Okay.
And then he gets kind of tired of it and moves on. So that's kind of something that he's known for.
Which is seems to be what he did in this case.
Yeah, he got a little freaked out and didn't want to do it anymore. So
because of the paranormal activity, did he encounter something that was like, "Whoa, I was expecting paranormal activity, but not really"?
Yeah, I think so. And I think wherever he was living, he was messing with the portal and stuff. And I think he got more than he appreciated.
So
some attachments and things that kind of hung around. So
how long ago was that?
Oh, my sense of time is awful. Steve, how long ago did Robbie walk away?
Almost 4 years ago now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So did you have a pretty good team put together then? Or did you reach out to other people after that? Because a lot of times that's what people do. I kind of call it curating a group, because they bring people in for certain reasons. Maybe there's a sensitive, maybe there's the skeptic, maybe there's the tech guy. You know, everybody kind of comes in for a reason. Did you kind of do that with the group after that, or had you already sort of done that?
I did not. Robbie kind of did that as we went along. He ran into Steve and he was like, "Oh, Steve's so cool. We got to get him into our group. You know, he's got all this equipment and he knows tech and all this stuff." And I was just like, "Cool." Because I don't stranger. I was like, "Oh, great. I've got to deal with this Steve guy."
Yeah, this is going to be fun. Had you been interested in the paranormal, though? Was that something that was a pretty intriguing offer to you?
Yes, my whole life. So my dad had a psychic friend who actually owned a company, and I would go to her seances and stuff at her shop. And I definitely played with a Ouija board and created some of the hauntings in my childhood home for sure.
No touchy-touchy. Don't touch them.
I would think that I would think someone could have gotten grounded for that, but obviously, I don't know if you did or not.
Oh, my dad was always, hey, if you're going to do it at home. So
I guess that's true. That's some good advice, right? So you could, maybe he could sort of supervise you a little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a, if that's what you want to say.
We did end up investigating her childhood home, though.
Yep, we did.
Yes.
That was fun.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to introduce everybody, and then we're circling back to that, Erica, because I want to hear how that went. So then you brought in Steve. Was he your first person that you brought in out of the group who's with us today?
Yes.
Okay, so Steve, you came in, and is it for those reasons? You were good at tech. You had some abilities that she thought would help the group?
Well, I've been doing this forever. Let's see. When did I start doing this? Well, I was in my 20s. So it's been a few decades off and on. So I've been doing this a long time. And yes, I do have a tech. I am techie. And I had already gotten equipment because my wife and daughter and I were going to start doing it anyway before I even met Rob. So I just met Rob on Facebook one night, and he's like, oh, I'm going to go out to Mercury Cemetery. I said, okay, I'll go with you. And that's how it all started. So when he adopted me, that automatically adopted Laura and Chelsea.
So now Laura and Chelsea are with us.
Yes.
Yep. So let's go to Laura first. How are you connected with Steve?
I'm married to him.
So you're Mrs. Steve.
I'm Mrs. Steve, yes.
So is the paranormal something you had been interested in a while, or did you tell Steve, I'd really rather take up bowling or something like that? But if this will help our marriage, I will do it.
I've always been interested in it. Like you, I grew up in a haunted house, had some weird things happen. My mom was into a lot of like psychic stuff. We had a we called him our guru, psychic, that we would go to, and he taught classes and everything. So my mom would go and do that. So it was kind of something in our blood, and we all had abilities of some sort, me and my mom and one of my sisters anyways. So we've always kind of been into it. But yeah, we grew up in a haunted house. I had a lot of weird stuff happen there. And then when Chelsea was younger, where we lived in a house, I had a lot of weird activity there too. So it's always interested me.
Now Chelsea is with you, and is Chelsea your daughter?
She's my daughter, yes.
Okay, Chelsea, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. So this is something that you have grown up in.
Kind of. Yeah. Like mom said, grew up in a haunted house, you know, her house that she grew up in. So my grandparents' house was haunted too. Had some just, you know, interesting, strange experiences. And I started noticing my own abilities at a young age, but never really learned how to harness them or anything until just a couple of years ago.
What kind of things did you notice from a young age? Because sometimes, you know, when you're a kid and you have things happen, you don't know that it doesn't happen to other kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's hard because when I was growing up, I had the abilities. And back then, you know, because I'm 50, how old am I? 56. So back then, it wasn't accepted. People didn't talk about it.
Right.
So, and I didn't know anybody else that had abilities. So it was weird for me, but you know, I think it's easier now.
So it's a generational thing then.
Sorry. Yes.
It's my turn.
It's your turn.
Okay. Well, so when I was a kid, yeah, I didn't really think anything too much of it. Maybe I thought my eyes were just playing tricks on me. When I would see spirits, I would see animals. I would know things before they happened. Like if somebody was going to call or knock on the front door, I would know before it happened, like split second before. I've seen in the house. If you know what Slender Man looks like, this is what this creature looked like. Ooh. I don't know if it was or not, obviously, but this is what it looked like in my bedroom, in my mirror. So I just saw things and just thought my eyes were playing tricks on me when I was little.
Is that something that has continued your whole life? Because I know with some kids, they kind of grow out of it. But it sounds like with your mom, it stuck with her. And with you, you still have the abilities, right?
Yeah, I do. And we do have another person on the team that's not here tonight. He's another medium on the team besides me. He helped me gain the knowledge and the access and the understanding to what my abilities are. So I see things quite frequently now, but they no longer terrify me.
I think finding the right mentor for someone like you is so important.
It really is.
It's a
whole new world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now let's go to Cody. Cody,
hi.
How long have you been with the group?
I'm new.
Oh, how new is new?
4 months.
A month?
Yeah.
A month, yeah.
Brand new. So you just randomly decided to join a paranormal group, or was this something that you had been looking to do for a while?
It was kind of random. I live where in Milford. So when they were here at Hotel Milford, I got to meet them.
Oh, I was watching that video. Were you the person that it was like, oh, she's just joining us tonight?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And it stuck. And here you are still with them. Because that was a really compelling video, actually. There was a lot of activity in that video.
Yes.
So I'm impressed amazing. That after a night like that, you're like, I'm in.
Yes.
Yay for you. And let's see, Brady, how long have you been with the team?
What, a couple years now?
2 years.
Yeah, a couple years now.
What is it about this team? Why did you want to join? Is that kind of something that you've always been interested in?
Well, I've been interested in the paranormal for a long time anyway. I've been kind of empathic my whole life. I've been able to feel things, feel the spirits, feel, I guess, the entities for a very long time. Started ghost hunting with a few other teams around here because I've been ghost hunting for, what, 6-7 years now. And did a few investigations in and around Broken Wings, and they're just more of a family to me. I was very drawn to them, to the way they investigate, the professionalism that they bring to investigations, even though it is Erica and Susie and Steve. and we give each other shit all the time, but it is just a big family, you know.
Hey, if you're gonna do it, you may as well have fun.
Yes, yes.
There's a blooper reel on the end of every video.
There might be at the end of this podcast too. And then there's one more person, Susie.
Hi,
Susie. How long have you been with the team?
Almost 4 years. It'll be 4 years in a few months.
Why did you want to join the team? Is this, you know, something that maybe Steve, you've been doing this for a long time?
Well, for me, I think it goes back to a lot of people who are interested in the paranormal experience, have paranormal experiences. I grew up in a haunted house as well. I would see a lot of things, both things that were protective as well as things that could be harmful. It scared me so bad that I ended up closing myself off. About 5 years ago, my son's father had passed away. After he passed away, I could feel a lot more things. It's like being that close to death opened me up in some ways. Mm. I'd always watched paranormal shows. I've always been interested. I've always dreamed of doing it. But it's such a tight, close-knit community, it's really difficult to get into. Robbie, the founder, ended up being my brother's best friend. And so he needed someone to come and help. So I came to an investigation and he goes, okay, I'm leaving the team now. And they decided to keep me.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Did you say, was it something I said? Because I showed up and now you're leaving.
Well, I was very confused. I'm like, well, you're the only person I know. I've known you for forever. You've been my brother's best friend. And now it's just like you're setting me on the side of the street, literally at a cemetery.
Yeah, with full of mosquitoes.
I mean, but we all get along really well. Our team, we don't have people who quit frequently. We don't cycle through team members. We all have our certain, you know, the certain things that we enjoy doing, and we get along really well. It's been a great experience.
And that's what I wanted to ask. I'll ask Steve, does everybody on the team kind of have their own thing they do? And sometimes that happens by default, you know, because, you know, Chelsea has different abilities than you have.
Absolutely. And that's one reason why it does work so well. We've never technically, aside from Rob leaving, we've never lost a member. We have removed one when we won't talk about that, but we have removed a member that we had no choice to because of something that happened online. That's neither here nor there. But yes, everybody has their own strengths. Like, because we have Chelsea and Brent, so we have two mediums that have similar abilities, not exactly the same, but similar. And then we have Susie, who's really, she's kind of techie too, like I am. So she helps me out with some of the stuff that we do on YouTube. And she handles the live really well. And she's really good at detecting like EMF and things like that. Then we have Brady, he's just basically the life of the party. And plus, as he said, he's empathic. He's a protector. Yeah. So he definitely, he knows when he feels something at a location, and we can usually verify that. And then my wife, she has abilities that she's blocked off, similar to Susie years and years ago, but it wouldn't be a team if my whole family wasn't part of it.
So I shop.
She shops. Yeah.
Yeah, I do the talking. So when we go to you know, these antique or thrift stores, yes, I just shop the whole time. But I'm the talker. I sit there and talk to the people behind the scenes kind of thing while everybody sets everything up. So.
And then Cody being new, she's still in that where she's afraid of, you know, she doesn't know what to ask. You know, just like all of us went through at one point.
We all did.
So we're going to force her to ask questions. That's just the way it has to work.
I'm going to stick her in the dark one day.
Yes, we're going to handcuff her to in the solitary confinement area of the prison and make her ask questions.
Got to break her in.
No,
So we have plans. So currently Cody's a pretty face right now. It'll get much less pretty once she starts asking questions.
I wish you all the best, Cody.
Don't forget Erica.
Thank you.
And then Erica.
Oh, Erica.
Erica's the F-bomb queen.
And the booker.
And she does all the bookings for us. She is the absolute best at getting us locations. I don't know that, and keep in mind, we do sometimes 30 plus a year.
Oh, you guys are busy.
Yes. Okay. So we make the TV shows look like they're slow because we don't stop. We take off for the holidays and then we're right back at it. Sometimes Erica will be booking March of the next year in December. So
do you guys go back to the same locations often, or do you like to go to different locations?
It takes a lot for us to repeat locations.
Okay.
It is uncommon. Unless it's like the Masonic Temple and the St. James Hospital, where the activity is just so high, or the place is so large that you can't do it in one night. Same with the Dumas brothel. We've done that a couple of times, but typically we try to not do places
multiple times, but there are exceptions. Plus, we also host private events for a company here in Utah called Northrop Grumman. So we host private events for them. So once we've done a location, we won't take them to a location we haven't done before. But once we've done a location and we feel it's safe enough to take people that aren't as experienced, then we do that as well. So, but typically, no. As a team, we try to spread out as much as we can and keep things fresh.
And we've been through 6 states, so we definitely like new things.
Yeah.
So you guys, you guys will travel to get to a location.
Yeah, you're in Kansas, right?
I am in Kansas. When are you coming?
Yeah, don't you worry. We're going to get down to the Sally House eventually.
I was going to say, you're going to Atchison, aren't you? That is one haunted little town.
Yeah, if we can get to Sally House, we'll get there. That's for sure.
And there's several, if you do go and spend a few days, because there's several different places you will want to investigate there.
Yeah.
There's some really good locations.
Yeah, we're definitely spreading out. I mean, we've been as far as California. We had plans to do other states this year, but Erica has done a wonderful job of getting us the best locations in Idaho. So we're going to be pretty much living in Idaho this year.
Well, the last 2 years was Montana, I feel. So
3 years we've been to Montana.
So you guys have gone to a lot of different locations, and there was one that I wasn't planning on talking about, but right before we started recording, y'all have to go and drop something interesting on me. Like, you just went to a location this past weekend that you said was one of the most active locations you have been to.
Yeah.
I'll start with Erica. So tell me a little about the location you went to, because it had antiques in there.
Yeah, so it's an antique store called Another Man's Treasure in Tooele, right off of Main Street and Vine Street, I think. Really old store. I don't know exactly when it was built. I think the late 1800s, Steve?
Yes, late 1800s, and then the other half of the building was built in the early 1900s.
Yeah, so super old. It used to house miners. It's worn a lot of different hats, and it was just haunted as hell.
Is it a place that has been investigated by other groups? Do they do investigations there frequently?
Yes. I don't know. I don't think super frequently, because I think we were the first ones there in over a year, but other groups have done it.
Well, the first group there in over a year, if nobody's been in and out of there investigating, I could see why you might have stirred up some stuff.
Oh my gosh, yes. Chelsea wound up in my lap. I thought I was going to have to take that bitch to a priest. Yeah, so it scared the crap out of me. That's the first time in a long time.
What was the activity like? I'll direct that to Susie.
It started out fine. And then all of a sudden, we had this REM pod, this EMF detector, just continually going off. And I have a tri-field meter. It's not spiking. And it didn't matter where we put equipment. It was just going off. We're in the top floor. There's no electricity on. No reason for any type of spikes. It was answering questions on our flux devices. And then as we're trying to walk away, it was like splitting us up. Things would be happening downstairs. We could hear like a full-blown conversation downstairs. The entire place is closed and locked down. There's no one else there except for us. It was pulling people outside. There was like a kid, or Chelsea saw something. Something hit the window, but there was no one outside. We heard 3 knocks on the wall. So when we're like going down, we're trying to debunk, figure out where all of this is coming from or what's happening. And then as we leave, crazy stuff starts happening for everyone else. It was so anxiety ridden. The basement, it was like this constant sound of slamming doors. You could hear footsteps, things were being moved, voices. 3 knocks happened multiple times. Like, whatever was there was definitely messing with us.
Let me add something about the basement. There's a bunch of stuff in totes. Now, remember, this is an antique store. So the basement's technically where he keeps the stuff that doesn't belong in the store.
It hasn't gone through yet.
He hasn't gone through yet. So there's this tote full of Halloween decorations. And we were literally sitting there right when Chelsea had jumped on Erica's lap. And there's these skull lights inside the tote that started flashing. Inside the tote.
Oh.
So not anything we could have done to make them go off. They were literally inside a closed tote.
And we thought they were cat balls that somebody left behind.
But they were
digging around trying to find where this light's coming from. And yeah, it's inside a tote. The skulls are flashing.
Yeah.
And Chelsea, how did that feel for someone like you to be in a location like that? Was it overwhelming?
It was a little bit, honestly. I haven't been scared in a very long time. Again, you know, having more access and understanding of my abilities, I'm literally like normally chasing down spirits that I don't like down hallways in old abandoned buildings and stuff. And so this one, the fact that it actually was scaring me a little bit was very different. I mean, like after I got spooked, I was okay. But yeah, it was very different to have something like that after not for a long time. Because if you watch the older videos, there's a door that shuts on me and it terrifies me, and I'm jumping up on mom.
She's climbing up on me. Freaking out.
Well, and we were freaking out because when Chelsea gets scared, we know there's a problem because she sees the things and she's like, oh, you're fine. It only looks like this scary wolf man, you know, who has souls inside of him. And it's like, okay, that's fine. But that night to have Chelsea scared all of us, too.
Hey,
yeah, poor Erica, I think, got it the most.
So if you just did that, how long does that take you to turn around the video and get it posted? Is that like a few weeks?
This time of year, I try to space them out in two-week increments. When we get to locations that are larger where, like, for example, another man's treasures, we put 8 cameras out plus our carry-along cameras. So that's 12 cameras. When we do like a prison, we might put 20 cameras out. So depending on how much footage I have to dig through, since I'm the only one that does that, and that's intentional, not that any one person on the team wouldn't offer to help. The problem is I know how to look for it. I it's faster if I just do it.
And there's a continuity to it as well.
Yeah, and Suze, that's why Susie's great that she handles the short videos for me, so I can focus on, you know, the long form videos. But typically, I try to post every 2 weeks, and then when we get closer to the end of the year, depending on how many locations we're doing closer to the end of the year, I might have to space it out longer to get us through November and December and part of January.
Now, I want to talk to you about another location. And have you investigated more than once at the Salt Lake Masonic Temple?
Yes, we've investigated there twice.
Okay, because that is a big location. I don't know. I have not been there. But looking at the pictures of it, this is a big location, isn't it?
Yes, and we have access to all but the top. Well, we have access to the first 4 floors.
Yeah, only the first.
The floors above the 4th floor are just storage. There's really no sense in going in there, but there are multiple rooms that are designed for
ceremonies.
Yeah, ceremony rooms. Like there's a red room. I don't remember the names of them now off the top of my head.
It's called Maroon. The maroon.
Anyways, but there's 4 fancy rooms in there, and the whole place is fancy, plus the auditorium. And it doesn't matter where you go in there. You could stay in one place all night and get activity. You don't even have to move. Brady, tell them about the Masonic Temple.
Well, Masonic Temple was a blast. And it is a big, temple. A lot of rooms, a lot of disembodied voices. It was crazy to me how Chelsea, being a psychic medium, they were, I guess, trying to push her out. It seemed like to me that they didn't want to communicate with her. Whereas with Brett, they were kind of communicating more with him on the psychic side. It was really, it was a crazy investigation. Both times we went was a blast.
And I do want to ask about that, because the Freemasons are a rather secretive society. Who knows what they're doing behind closed doors? I don't know. But it was male, wasn't it? It was, there really aren't any women Freemasons.
Predominantly male, yeah.
So for Chelsea, if there are a lot of Freemasons still connected to that location, they don't want to talk to her. They want to talk to him.
Yeah, they, there was this one. It was crazy. It was like a memory, but then all of a sudden the memory came to life. It's like they knew I was there. And once they noticed I was there, they pushed me out of the room and shut the door in my face. And so
like literally like the door shut in your face.
Oh, it was when I was in my my meditative one-on-one state with the spirits directly. So like I go into the state where I'm and they're playing their level, their frequency. And so it was just like in that moment. But yeah, any of the Masons that were still there would not speak to me, but any of the other spirits that were not Mason that were there, they would speak to me. So it was definitely very interesting.
What about the other girls on the team? Did you all kind of experience that in a different way?
Yeah, they were calling us sluts and bitches and whores.
No. Yeah,
they were.
They were telling us to shut the F up. I mean, they were so disrespectful, so rude. Like, shut up, woman.
Oh, wow. And Laura, did you pick up on that too?
Yeah. I've had some experiences with the Masonic Temple when I was younger. So it's kind of a creepy place to me anyways. But my friend, her brother was a Mason and she was a Job's daughter. So I went there for dances and parties and ceremonies and stuff, and had some weird experiences myself. But yeah, it is male oriented. So but yeah, I did pick up on a lot of that too.
But even though it's a temple, they host public events. So they'll have raves, they'll have wrestling, they do concerts and shows. So it's not like a sacred temple in a sense.
Well,
I guess it is some extent.
Because my guess would be that a lot of the activity there goes back to the people who were really tied to that building because of the Freemasons.
Kind of the founders of that building or the builders of that building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing we found inside of the Masonic Temple was a lot of the spirits were peekers, where they would show themselves on camera, but they would just peek around the corner and then disappear. It's like they're just sitting there watching us. We had one shadow figure that ran across the stage in the auditorium behind the entire team. And Erica felt it, but she couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
What did that feel like, Erica?
Terrifying. I never hide my fear. You'll hear every swear word out there come out of my mouth. And then I'm going to bail and leave everybody for fucking dead. I'll sacrifice this whole team. I just have to outrun all of them.
It's like, there goes Erica. Somebody stop her and find out what happened before she leaves.
Right.
Because I just could see why women might be treated differently there than the men. And so Steve, what was the experience then like for you?
I didn't have any fears there, but I could tell, you know, in some places you go to where you'll be like, oh, the energy shifting, and usually it's somebody else that's picking up on that. But in this case, I could feel the energy shifting, especially when we were in the Egyptian room. And that's where we captured most of the stuff, I think, was in the Egyptian room.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't understand is, as pro-male as it is, why we captured the apparition of an 8 or 9 year old child there.
That was crazy.
Girl.
Not just once, but twice.
In two different rooms.
Twice on film.
In two different rooms.
Man, that's the last place you want to see a little girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we have theories. I'm not going to say what they are, but We have theories, and I'm sure you can grasp where I'm going, but Chelsea kind of saw something not so great with a child, you know, kind of like a some
sacrifice.
Sort of... Yeah. Something like that. So, yeah.
Disturbing.
Take that with, you know, with a grain of salt, but we've captured the little girl 2 times, and I'm sure if we went back, she may have gone back there. Who knows? You know, you never really know.
Well, and the Freemasons, too, are one of those organizations. I get why they originated. They had a skill set, you know, and if you go to Europe and you look at these buildings, you can see what they did. They it's art. It's very artistic. I don't get what the Freemasons continued to do and why it was kind of secretive.
Yeah, and I don't know, and I've gotten very little out of my father or my brother, who are both Masons, you know, that you would never get any information out of anybody. But the weird thing is like a lot of the temples that were built back in the days of, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they all have like an Egyptian room. So it's like they're themed. And the themes, there has to be a purpose behind the themes to these rooms, because they're all basically the same. They don't look the same, but they contain the same things. And there's an altar in every single room. It ain't hard to see what they look like, because we visit all the rooms and there's an altar in every single one of them.
And you can't get anything out of your brother and your dad.
Nope.
Golly.
Well, my dad's passed, but my brother, nope. I mean, after my dad passed, I gave my brother my dad's watch. His Mason watch, and what, because I can't be a Mason, don't want to be one, but yeah, my brother won't say nothing. They all take it to the grave.
So when we were there, because I was asking questions about the Queen Supreme, the Daughters of the Nile, and at one point we heard singing coming from upstairs.
Yep.
So we went upstairs to investigate, figure out what it was, and it ended up being in like the dressing room where all of the women will go and be. Maybe before performances, and we found a sheet with all of the songs that the women sing.
Yep.
And so it was kind of crazy that we heard the singing.
Say, that
we go
is
up
interesting.
There.
You guys said you've been there twice, correct?
Yes.
Was it the same type of activity both times, or
pretty much identical?
Really?
Yeah. Most locations when you go more than once. And Idaho prison would be a good example of that. The first time we went, we had a lot of in the moment stuff going on. And the second time we went, we captured more visual evidence the second time, but nothing was happening in the moment. It was like there was nothing there. And we were even investigating areas of the prison that nobody else had ever investigated. Our favorite host, Leslie, is at the Idaho prison. She is our favorite person to host an event, period. She's the best time.
Do you want to narrow that down a little bit?
We requested her for this summer. We get her again.
Yeah.
So what is it about her that makes her such a great host?
She's just a good time. And she steps in.
She's funny.
She's funny. And she
jumps in.
Yeah, she does jump in. She knows the history. So she knows what to listen for. She'll tell us, oh, you make sure you check that, because I guarantee I just heard this or something like that. And it's just the way that she interacts with us. I mean, she's almost like having an extra team member when we're there. She fits in with our group.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about Inside Paranormal Investigations with Broken Wings Paranormal. For more information, find them on Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.